Here. I'd like to take up at this time House Bill 126. Representative Gruenberg, if you please join us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Just to be very brief, the language I'd like to speak to is Section 2 of the bill. Section 1 is new language here. And I won't speak on the original impetus for Section 2. Just briefly to synopsize, though, as a result of a number of fraudulent offers to sell oil and gas leases here in Alaska, the Department of Commerce, who were represented here today, came to the governor and said, we need to extend the jurisdiction of the Securities Act so that we can prosecute these fraudulent schemes when they're offers to sell oil and gas leases in Alaska that are non-existent. And they'll go into some particular detail on the problems, the flyers, the fraudulent flyers that were circulated and that impelled the introduction of this bill. And this was very persuasive over in the House, strong support for the bill. We amended it at my request in Judiciary Committee to include not only oil and gas leases and mineral leases, but any leases on land in Alaska, including submerged lands, regardless of where the offer is made. Because obviously we have concern against fraudulent schemes involving the use of Alaskan land and Alaskan resources. The state has an interest in preventing such fraud. And secondly is the payments out of production under an oil or gas or mining lease. And this is a similar interest. And finally, on page 2, any fraudulent offer to sell an interest or participate in any real property located in Alaska or in an Alaskan corporation or a domestic limited partnership, an Alaskan limited partnership. And we intend that this jurisdiction may be exercised to the maximum extent consistent with the constitutions of Alaska and the Due Process Clause of the United States Constitution. There have to be minimum contacts with Alaska under the Constitution in order for this state to assume jurisdiction. And that language was specifically added after consultation with the Department of Commerce Division of Banking and Securities and after consultation with Mr. Bush of the Attorney General's office. And he is here also along with Mr. Carroll from the Division of Banking. And I'd be delighted to answer any questions, and thank you for taking the bill and taking me out of work.
Okay. Are there any questions, Representative Gruenberg, with regard to this momentous piece of legislation?
I think it's a good bill. I hope you can recommend it.
Actually, the state of Arizona legislated in this area a number of years ago when they began regulating the sales of land, particularly offerings out of state, but also in-state offerings.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else here to testify on the House Bill 126?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Larry Carroll. I'm with the Division of Banking Securities. I'm here to offer testimony on the committee substitute for HB 126. I have prepared a packet of materials for each of you, which I believe is before you, that contains several exhibits. I want to belabor you with all of that material at this time, but I would urge that you have an opportunity to look at the materials. If I may speak first to the Section 1 of the committee substitute, I offer an amendment in a very small sense to the, at line 9, item 5, the presently reads an investment contract, and we would ask that that be amended to read a security as opposed to just an investment contract. And the reason for that is that there's been a school of thought that applied the investment contract theory, the Howey test, to all securities. The U.S. Supreme Court recently disavowed that procedure. And in shorthand, what that means is that while every investment contract is a security, not necessarily every security is an investment contract. So by substituting the word a security, it in fact broadens it. It broadens the exemption, and I think it's appropriate for the purpose that you intend.
I appreciate your comments. Let me tell the committee first that the section 1 is language that the chairman put in with the concurrence of the department. It solves a a bit of a problem that's been in the statute for a long time. The present pension plans are regulated under ERISA, the federal law, and they are technically to be exempt from security requirements. You have to notify the division in writing. There's it's generally concurred that there has been zero compliance with that, very heavily regulated by the federal government, and that the best thing to do is to delete that provision because the federal government under ERISA is doing a more than adequate job for, in administering, or rather, in regulating pension plans, and that's what Section 1 of the bill does. With that prologue, please go on, Mr. Carroll.
And at line 11, between similar and benefit, I would ask that you would insert employees so that it's consistent and clearly understood that we're talking about employees' benefit plan. And I have no further for Section 1, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, please go on then.
With respect to the other sections, Mr. Grunberg has given you some background on that material. I hasten to point out to you that the bill now before you, the committee substitute now before you, Section 2 on, is similar, if not identical, to a bill passed by the Senate 2 years ago, which went to the House and then was reinstituted last year in the House, passed the House, and is now before you in the Senate. That was Senate Bill 482 2 years ago, which the all committees heard and was passed. And in connection with that, I have placed in the packets of exhibits a letter to then Chairman of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, Senator Eliason, from the Federal Trade Commission, which urges passage of the bill. And I suggest that you may wish to look at that if you have any questions concerning the federal people's thinking about this type of legislation. This is an ongoing problem, these oil and gas schemes. What goes around comes around. It changes its face, it changes the players, but the basic underlying properties remain in Alaska. We've been fortunate in that we have avoided, to a large degree, Alaska victims because we've used the press a great deal. And in that regard, I have included for you a recent memorandum and press releases which discusses these types of activities. Included with that is a very recent February press release and an investor alert that's been distributed to the press throughout Alaska and that discusses specifically oil and gas investment frauds. Included with your materials is a press release in the Anchorage Times, 625, that discusses penguin pasture leases linked to violent crime, so that you will get the flavor that this is not simply robbing with a pen. The players get a little angry with one another and they wind up washed up on beaches from time to time. This is a multi-million dollar type of activity. The concern that the division had at the time that we asked this bill to be introduced, some 2 years ago, was as a result of some particularly egregious offering circulars that were then in circulation throughout the country and in this state, one of which I have included in your packet, just the first two pages, which you will notice has a picture of the governor, which suggests that the governor supports this particular investment scam, which is shown to be an absolute fraud. The covering page, that also at the bottom you'll notice, has the names of Texaco, Union, Sohio, Arco, etc., etc. None of those companies participated in or had any knowledge or prior knowledge of this particular type of prospectus. In addition, this was done in a generic form, and we were able to identify 40-some companies that were using this particular material and inserting their own leasehold interests, most of which were BLM interests that they acquired for $1 and were selling to the public anywhere from $200 to $400 an acre. We were concerned because Alaska's image was literally being trashed, and that continues. We suggest that in times of economic hardship, it's difficult enough to raise investment capital, legitimate investment capital, much less when you're competing with these kinds of activities. the final thing that I've included for you is a list of some 200 companies which we've compiled on these types of firms, which you may want to take home and put by your telephone. At the risk of being accused of using numbers like a drunk uses a lamppost more for support than illumination, these things are presented to you for your at your convenience to look at. The basic thrust of my testimony is that it's a continuing problem. It's one that requires our attention, and we urge that you support and pass the bill. I do point out to you that there is a fiscal note with it, where we have asked for some clerical support to handle the ever mounting paper generated by these some 200 companies that we identified.
Are there any questions for Mr. Carroll?
No, but he gave some dandy testimony.
Very fast moving and good compendium. Thank you, Mr. Carroll.
Thank you.
With the concurrence of the committee, I will have committee counsel make the necessary changes to the committee substitute and bring that back and forth at our next meeting and hopefully pass that at that time.
May I be excused?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Carroll. With if counsel will make those changes to House Bill 126, we will lay that aside. Next, I would like to take up House Bill 493, which is the revisor's bill. Mr. Geardorf?
Thank you, Senator. And for the record, I'm Dave Geardorf, the revisor of statutes and Division of Legal Services. You have in front of you the House-passed version of the revisor's bill, and there's one thing in there that I promised I would bring to your attention before we do anything else with it. Pete Froelich, who I'm sure most of you know in the Attorney General's office, drafted Section 16 of this bill, which is on page 4 and 5. The relevant part of it's on page 5 from lines 4 through 17. It's basically an amendment to paragraph 9 of this section. He put a comma on line 14 after compensation, and that little comma has raised some concern within the real estate division, the enforcement arm of the state. Neither Pete nor I think that it's a well-placed concern, but and it's probably a comma that I could move editorially. But I said I would bring to your attention, and if you agree with us that it doesn't really need to be there. It could be after vocation, or it could just be omitted. I can do that editorially. If that's the only change the Senate wants to make this bill, I hate to see it have to go back for concurrence because of a comma. Their concern is that by putting that comma in there, the following clause, if the amount of the compensation is dependent upon or directly related to the value of the real estate with respect to which the act is performed, would relate to both as a vocation and for compensation, back up in line 14. I don't think that it does because compensation, we're talking about compensation, we're talking about vocation and compensation. And they say, Pete stuck it in there, I didn't take it out when I put it in the bill, and we didn't really give it much thought, except it looked like it broke up along the clause. So one of those commas that sometimes causes more grief than it's worth.
Perhaps Senator Ziegler, as the Senate grammarian, is perhaps more suited than any member of this body to comment on the misplaced comma.
I wouldn't care to comment about that comma, no.
It would seem to make sense to err on the side of conservatism by removing the comma, and is there any objection from any member of the committee, so it's inserted in the record here, that it should be removed editorially by the revisor? That would avoid any additional expense of doing a committee substitute or...
It was inserted through a manifest error in part of the Department of Law.
That would be noted for the record, not the revisor of statutes.
Well, the revisor approved of it, so I guess I have to share the point.
Come.
And I will.
Other than that, I'll answer any questions you might have. If we would, some fairly fast action would be appreciated because of sections 72 and 3, I think they are now, 72 and 3 in the last page of the bill. We're changing the effective dates of an act of last session to recognize a reality, and that is that the administration, in adopting regulations setting fees for occupations and professions, is not doing it in a large group with one effective date, but is doing it by occupation and profession, which is trickling out those regulations and causes a real effective date problem in most of Chapter 37 from last year. And the sooner we can get this straightened out, the sooner some budget realities and other things can occur, which will reflect the way they're really doing it.
What I intend to do is have the bill lay on the table for a week. I always like members to have more than ample opportunity to look at revisor's bill. As you well know, in the past, before your revisor, there was some criticism of the content of revisor's bills. And for that reason, again, I think it's wise to lay the bill on the table in the Prime Committee of Reference in this body and give every member ample opportunity. Staff counsel has looked at it. We've been active, and I think it's important for all members of the committee to have a similar opportunity.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Ziegler,
I'll bring it up so that you can look into this. As a revisor, you shall edit and revise the laws of consolidation without changing the meaning of any law. Okay, that's what it says. In sections 2 and 3, you have drastically rewritten the law, and I don't question your motivation or your intent, but you're making law because you're changing. And so, would you take a look at what I think you've done in section 2 and 3? Because I think that calls for statutory changes by the legislature rather than by the revisor. And in this, I could be incorrect, and so I apologize. If I'm correct, then maybe remedial legislation is needed.
Okay. With all due respect, Senator, the language you quoted from Title I relates to my editorial conduct. And I'm editing the law to codify it or to take out personal pronouns. I can't change the meaning. But the revisor's bill, by statute, is to recommend substantive as well as technical changes. It's in ASO 105036.
So what you've got in your proposed bill, and I'm not really questioning, it doesn't make that much difference to me, but you have radically changed existing law.
I agree with you that sections 2 and 3
yes,
do
sir.
Change the
yes,
law.
Sir.
There's no question about it.
Is that within your purview?
I believe it is, Senator, because the section I just quoted, or cited, instructs me to prepare for submission to you as the legislature legislation for the correction or removal of deficiencies, conflicts, or obsolete provisions, or to otherwise improve the form or substance of the statute law of the state. And it is my opinion that Section 2 and 3 are legitimate recommendations to improve the substance of the statute law of the state and correct what was either an accidental or an inadvertent oversight, which people in the executive branch who reviewed that recommendation a long time ago, before you came to the what said needed to be done to close a very large loophole in the liquor law.
Yeah, well, my question is, do we do that by legislation rather than through your offices?
This is legislation.
Yeah, okay.
I would not dare do that editorially, obviously. And I should be fired by you immediately if I tried to.
We won't take any more of the committee's time with us today. This is a matter that each of us can read the a commentary on. As I said, I do intend to lay the bill upon the table, and Senators, obviously the changes are significant. Senator Zucker's points are well taken, and obviously your response is well reasoned. And I'll leave that for the committee at our next hearing on this bill within a week. Are there any further questions, Mr. Garf? If not, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. I have given Suzanne and your staff some backup materials for some of this, so you might ask her first for information if you come to me, but I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next, I would like to take up Senate Bill 464. This is the committee bill, very, very simple in its language. It provides that when there is a reprimand, a copy of the reprimand shall be sent to the Judicial Council in addition to the Chief Justice and the judge. And the Judicial Council obviously is charged with many duties that that relate to judges, and there has been the suggestion that even in the case of private reprimands, it is appropriate for the Judicial Council to receive those reprimands because they may at some time be required to pass on the qualifications of that judge. You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to that motion? If there is no objection, Senate Bill 464 is passed from Committee of Individual Recommendations. Next, I'd like to take up House Bill 288, the subsistence bill. I'd like to call first Gordon Jackson as the first witness. Mr. Jackson. Perhaps Mr. Jackson comes back in. The second witness, whose last name I was not quite sure I can read, George Mitsato. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Senator. My name is George W. Mitsato, and I represent the position on subsistence for Juno, Alaska Native Brother Camp Number 2, which is subordinate to the Grand Camp, so it only reflects our opinion with respect to the subsistence issue. As some of you know, we've attended almost all of the subsistence hearings for the last year and a half, and our position has never changed, as reflected in our letter to you of March 24, 1986. I think you all have copies of this thing. We strongly urge Senate CS for House Bill number 288 be reported out as passed by the Resources Committee as soon as possible without amendments. We also met jointly with RARA, who represents Rural Action Committee to the state of Alaska. And they have a similar position, which was supposed to be given by Gordon Jackson, who is not here at the moment.
Are there any questions for Mr. Miyasato? Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate your testimony. Next, I'd like to call is the next witness, Denise Cummings. Is there anyone else here? Those are the only names that I have on my list of persons who wish to testify. Are there other persons that are here who do wish to testify? Mr. Hopper?
Mr. Chairman, I think, give you an amendment that I have been for some time saying that I was going to offer, which provides that in order to exercise the preference as included in the Senate Resources Committee bill, which I think is, does a pretty good job, by the way, it requires the individual exercising the preference to have in their possession a current valid resident hunting, trapping, or sport fishing license. It's issued under the 25-cent license provisions. 25-cent license provisions are the provisions that require that the individual either have an annual family gross income of less than $5,600 or be receiving state or federal aid. It basically has the effect of using the existing system, which we have vendors all over the state issuing these licenses, as a method of applying a needs test to subsistence. In the debate when the issue was on the ballot several years ago, former Governor Hammond, current governor, and a number of others said that the one place where the subsistence law was possibly flawed and amendments should be looked at was in the area of need. This applies a need standard, again, without any new bureaucracy or creating any new kind of a license. It's already an existing license, and there, I think, are between 12 and 14,000 of them issued every year. I realize that this may cause some concern of those who feel that we should do exactly what the federal government says in dealing with Alaskan citizens. I think that this approach represents the most straightforward and real way to deal with subsistence needs, but to deal fairly with all Alaskans. And I think the federal government may object. I think there's a substantial chance that they would reassess their statutory situation in light of a reasonable amendment like this.
Are there other comments from members of the committee?
That was my question. Don't we get into a confrontation situation right now with the Fed Center? Is it important that we do this? Because everybody seems to agree that what Resources gave us is not too shabby a bill.
Well, I can't support the Resources Committee bill, and my constituents probably can't.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just trying to find out. It seems to me like we're moving into a massive confrontation thing, and the Feds may or may not accede were we to adopt your amendment.
And I think the chances are initially that they would not accede. I asked the question of Undersecretary Horn at one of the Resources Committee meetings what they would do if they were forced to deal with subsistence management, and his response to me was probably more positive than anything the state has done in resource management to date, in that they would identify specific populations of both people and resource, and it would be far better implemented than we've had any implementation from the state to date. I hate to see that, and I was surprised that his answer was so much more logical than what's been going on in the state. But I think it does bring us to, it certainly puts the question really on the table as to whether we're going to do what, as I say, two governors and a number of other people suggested when the issue was before the voters, or not.
Okay. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, let me see if I understand the amendment. Would this require a subsistence permit in the current license, or would we require an entirely new subsistence license?
The current law provides for a 25-cent license for anyone who is receiving state or federal aid or whose family income is less than $5,600. This amendment simply provides that for those who fit into the subsistence priority system as established in the resources bill, they must also be qualified for this 25-cent license. The result is that we're using the existing structure to put a need criteria into the subsistence preference.
Is there another member of the committee who wishes to speak on this amendment? If not, Mr. Gohl has requested that he be allowed to speak. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be very brief. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Peter Gohl. I represent House District 2, and I come before you today as chairman of the House Special Committee on Fisheries. I've asked to speak on the matter for a moment because I think it's awfully important, as I'm sure all of you do, that we get some sort of a solution to this problem at the nearest possible opportunity. The amendment is certainly well-intentioned and represents an effort, if I understand the sponsor correctly, to ensure that those people who are most in need of our subsistence resources get them. But I'd like to call your attention for a moment to the work that was done in the Resources Committee to add criteria for the personal use classification and suggest that that will provide an opportunity for a broad spectrum of Alaskans to continue their gathering and fishing game. And then we come to the issue of, well, then what is this priority for? What is the point of having anybody receive a priority use? The rationale which has been used by the federal government, used by this state, and I believe has been quite successful, at least insofar as protecting the interests of that group, has been to suggest that communities with a substantial dependence, or in the language of the bill as amended by Senator Halford in Resources Committee, a principal characteristic of a community and the economy of the community be the subsistence gathering and fishing game. That would eliminate many of the communities that currently enjoy a subsistence priority. For example, the question has arisen whether Haines, for example, would continue to be able to enjoy in downtown Haines, or residents of that area, a subsistence priority under the bill. If they would lose that opportunity, then I'd ask you again, for whom is this preference being given? Why is there a priority? And the answer that's been generally accepted and is consistent with ANILCA and was testified to by Mr. Horn and most other people who understand the logic behind ANILCA was that those communities that, due to isolation, due to the lack of alternative resources, etc., were in fact, as communities dependent upon subsistence, that interest be respected and protected. And I'd like to just ask you to give some special consideration to that fact, because just to use an anecdote, if I might, often the person who is the best hunter, who will bring in the game for the elders, and this is real life we're talking about, might also be the person who's successful in other areas of endeavor, and might be the person who has a job at the store or has worked his way up in the corporation, and is bringing home enough income so that he does not qualify for this opportunity, and yet the community's dependence remains. And the communal nature of subsistence gathering is very basic to the protection of those isolated communities who require a preference so that they do not have to use the political process each and every year before the Board of Fish to establish their customary and their traditional use. The reason that this is not consistent with ANILCA is at least in large part because it does not respond to customary and traditional use, nor does it respond to the needs of communities as a collective. And I respectfully suggest that you give serious consideration to the implications of the amendment so that we don't add a new issue to something which has been so hotly debated for now nearly 2 years. So of course I am speaking against the amendment, and yet I'm trying, if I can, to give deference and respect to the good intentions of the amendment, which is to recognize need, but to suggest to you that both history in Alaska and history of our communities, in fact, and federal law all require that we look at the community's needs and not just focus on the individual's needs within those communities.
Thank you. Your comments are very diplomatic and well-intentioned. I understand that.
Yeah, I appreciate your comments too, but I would just point out that one of your areas of comment is the reason for the way the language of the amendment is drafted. Currently in statute, we provide that an individual who's blind can have another person harvest for that person. And this language would allow for consideration of the community need and the fact that the best hunter may be someone who is otherwise employed. And so it doesn't just provide that the individual who actually does the hunting has to be qualified. It says that the individual has to have the license issued to themselves or issued to another for whom they're harvesting the resource. So because I think there are some valid situations there. But I think when we're setting up a system that differentiates between our citizens, and we find that the DOT employee that moves from Anchorage to Kotzebue at $90,000 a year immediately picks up a preference to take his jet boat up the Kobuk River, somehow that's a substantial affront to a lot of the people in the state of Alaska, although I think they really do support the concept of subsistence. They have a problem with discrimination, not based on uses, but based on users classified in this kind of a method that we seem to have gotten ourselves into. So I was trying to be sensitive to a major portion of what you said.
May I respond?
Please do, sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I respect that, and I agree with you that's a real concern for people. I guess the thing that keeps sticking in my mind is my own personal experience, because unlike some of my colleagues, I don't sport fish and I don't hunt, but I also don't buy this stuff that I call poison beef that they send up full of chemicals from down south, and it's just one of my personal preferences. And I enjoyed having the subsistence priority, and I enjoyed the subsistence lifestyle. But that certainly is not justification for giving me a preference, and I respect that very much. The opportunity I have within my community to assert my need under a personal use system is something which this bill is going to protect much more specifically than we've ever had before, so that those folks in Anchorage and Fairbanks and elsewhere who want to go before the board or through the local process that we go through in allocation of resources and ensure that they get their piece of the action, if you will, or a piece of the pie or numbers of fish, they'll have an opportunity to do that. And it brings me back again to why a priority. And again, I say that the priority should be community-based. It should recognize that there are communities that are remote, that are isolated, that have limitations in the abilities of its citizens to deal with that allocation process in the same way that possibly you and certainly I have the opportunity to do. And I recognize that there will be some people who might not need it, but I think it's important to recognize what it is that they get. If you're one of those DOT workers who goes into a community, and I'm not suggesting Kotzebue, but somewhere really out in the remoter parts of the state where this priority is a very serious issue, your options in that community are severely limited, and you're not going to be able to duplicate your lifestyle unless you live on Twinkies and so forth. Certainly the stores have some foods available, but there are also many communities that just don't have an adequate supply of staples that would satisfy you, or forgive me, that would satisfy me. And I would like to feel that I had, if I were put into that remote community, surrounded by people with whom I wanted to be at one, so to speak, and not to isolate myself and become a separate sort of person, but participate in the community's life, that I wouldn't want to be singled out as someone who could not go fishing with the others and so on. And in theory and in debate, it certainly is an effective argument to suggest that those individuals should be treated differently. But I think once you get into the situation that we're going to address by having already limited that priority to really not that many places and certainly not that many fish or caribou, that those people represent a very, very small number of people within a very, very small group. And although it may be unattractive to suggest that they should have the priority too, I think it's a price, if you will, that we pay to ensure that those folks who are truly dependent do not have to go through elaborate mechanisms in order to establish their dependence at that community level. And I would cite for you the very unfortunate occurrences that happened in some of our communities last year in the so-called Tier 2 hunts, where people within a community, because they had to compete with people from far away cities for a limited supply of game within the community, were divided among themselves, and a great deal of social disruption occurred. It's my feeling, as a supporter of the original House Bill 288, and with no more than two or three lines that I differ with on this version, maybe five or six, but no more than that, I think we really could achieve something here for the people of the state. We could limit the subsistence priority to the communities that need it most, and I would hope we could eliminate some of the internal friction within the communities that this current post-Madison era has created for us. And finally, I feel a little bit, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all. I know that you're very serious about this, and I know that you each have your own opinions, and I have my own opinion and so forth, but I really compliment the Senate for the progressive efforts that have taken place over the last few months to take a version which had been highly criticized and turn it into a version that's almost universally accepted. And I think you can do a real service to the state by following the recommendation of the previous speaker, which I know is supported by many of our native and rural groups throughout the state, by respectfully suggesting that to the extent possible you move through the resources substitute without creating new and easily identified political issues for people to become divided over.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Gold?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Yes.
I'm John Tabor, Director of the Division of Public Assistance in the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'd like to speak to the amendment if I may.
Please do, sir.
One of the things that often escapes attention in the discussion over subsistence is the fact that a very small percentage of Alaska's population participates in welfare programs at any given moment in time, and particularly in the food stamp program, we have one of the lowest participation rates in the United States, as it turns out. Something on the order of 5% of our state population participates in the food stamps. In rural areas, approximately 10% of our population participates. Statewide, a little over 3.5% of our population participates in the FDC. The reason that I mention these statistics is that I'm very concerned that the amendment would have very serious budgetary implications for the welfare system in the state, in that it would force people through the welfare system in order to access the subsistence system. A person can be entitled to some form of state or federal assistance in Alaska with as much as 150% of the poverty level income established for the state of Alaska. For a family of four, poverty level income in Alaska is a little over $12,000 a year, approximately $13,000 a year. 150% of that would push someone up in the vicinity of a $20,000 income for a family of four. In rural areas, many families, of course, are much larger than that. We have food stamp households as large as 20 individuals in our rural Alaska program. And so there's a very real possibility that unintentionally this amendment could force people into the welfare system who are not presently accessing the system for whatever reason. That in turn could have very dramatic budgetary consequences for state general fund, both from the standpoint of welfare benefits paid under many of our programs out of state general fund or partially out of state general fund, and also from the standpoint of the volume of applications that it would be necessary for the Division of Public Assistance to process in order to determine eligibility, whether or not the individual ultimately was deemed to be eligible for assistance. Clearly, the spread between a $5,600 income standard for current subsistence permit purposes and roughly $20,000 for a family of four would have major impact on the Division of Public Assistance.
Other questions, members of the committee? Senator Halpern.
I would point out that potential problem could be handled by simply deleting A, so the economic standard were the only standard, and it would relieve, I think, your question. Do you think that would take care of that problem?
By eliminating or participation in any state or federal assistance program, that would certainly solve.
Under the current licensing scenario, someone who wants a 25-cent license has to sign an affidavit which says which of the two they qualify under. So without any additional forms or any additional paperwork, they could simply do it under the economic standard, not under the welfare standard.
That would have no implications for us in that event.
Mr. Chairman, with that in mind, I would, I haven't offered the amendment, but I would strike on the draft amendment A4. So it reads 1605340
small a. Mr. Chairman, I have no preference with you. Do you want to hold this on the table? Do you want to move it now? Any comment to the substitute?
Do we have more changes in the census?
No. Okay. Mr. Halpern?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment to be inserted as a new section to read with the correction of the deletion of capital A or.
Okay. You've heard the motion. All those in favor of adding the amendment to the bill, raise your hand. All those opposed? 4-1, the amendment is added. We will incorporate a Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 288, bring that back before the committee at the next meeting.
We got anything else?
We have nothing else. Judiciary Committee is adjourned.
I wonder if we have a look at, is there any cases where somebody might have